So what is the one thing that you think we should do now as a sector to help our cause? What is the one thing now our best foot forward at this stage?
Well, there's an opportunity, of course, when you look at the party platforms, the NDP made a commitment to increasing funding, very general commitment, mm-hmm. but increase research. The Green Party had a very specific mm-hmm. platform around the increase to granting councils. And we know the Liberals in the past 4 years have been supportive of the sector. So in a minority parliament, there's an opportunity for the community because there is common ground between the parties. And they certainly will not agree on most things. But on this, I think you will find some common ground in order to move forward. But I think the thing to keep in mind is that really what you're trying to do is solidify the position that you've had and the successes that you've had. There will be a lot of attention on the government's plan for the economy and the deficit. They'll be under pressure to make cuts where they can to try and move the needle back towards balanced budgets. So what we need to do is really preserve the wins that we've had mm-hmm. while laying the foundation for future growth.
Mm. Okay. So here is another question. I see people are typing away, so we'll give you a little bit more time. What do we as a sector need to know before we build a solid and effective advocacy plan? And what do you think should be the components of that plan? You've mentioned some in your previous answer, but what information or knowledge should we be gathering now that will help us to put in place a plan over time?
Well, I think the thing to keep in mind is this is a new parliament. So we do have some MPs, of course, that are returning to parliament, but there are new MPs to get to know. So we really want to understand what level of knowledge mm-hmm. and understanding that this parliament has with respect to the value proposition of the research community. So understanding where we start from mm-hmm. with a new parliament, I think, is important. The other thing that really maybe perhaps goes beyond parliament is to understand and really reach out to Canadians on this issue. I'm often, you know, this community has asked in the past, why aren't we a campaign issue? And it's because we're not top of mind during an election campaign mm-hmm. for public. There are typically other problems that they feel are impacting their daily life. So between elections is the right time to engage Canadians when they have the luxury of putting aside some of those day-to-day concerns and really mm-hmm. thinking through what kind of research community the country should have. So the other thing I would encourage is outreach to the public and education there, because again, if we want political support for our agenda, it needs to enjoy public support.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So I think we have a couple of questions here, one by Margaret. And thank you for the feedback on the audio as well, Margaret. As far as I could tell, she says, the only party that mentioned support for scientific research in their platform summary was the Bloc. Now I hear that other parties included some support. How can we support them and keep funding at the top of their list?
So, yes, the Green Party actually had an extensive commitment to research, scientific research. In fact, they recommended the adoption of the full Naylor report.
Yes, yeah.
And I think I made the point through the campaign that the Green Party's biggest contribution to this parliament may be its strong support of science rather than the number of MPs it returned to parliament. And I still believe that to be true. That party strongly believes in the necessity for a vibrant research community. Now, appreciably, a lot of that attention is focused on the environment, but in their campaign platform, they extended that beyond and to include health. So I think it's working with all the parties to again remind them that some of the really difficult challenges that the country faced can only be solved with a commitment and investment in science.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about what this country is grappling with, even on the energy front, certainly true on climate change, we need to know better how to handle these problems. And so I think there will be an instinctual response to that argument where they appreciate that research may be the light that leads us in some ways out of the darkness on some of these files.
Mm. Thank you, Michelle. So we have another question from Laura. What do you feel is the best way to re-engage returning MPs in our local areas?
Great question.
Yeah.
So a congratulatory letter is pretty pro forma, and it will be recorded. So I think that's certainly an easy step to take. But I would try and identify different events where you could invite the Member of Parliament to visit you, the facility, the research facility that you may have in the riding, or bring researchers or young students in to meet with an MP. You can request a meeting in the riding office. So it's really to make that connection to say, hey, we're here, we're your constituents, these are the issues we care about, and it's always a fabulous opportunity if you can bring them in and show some of your work. It will come to life in a way that a briefing simply can't.
And just to add to what Michelle was saying, I was sharing a little bit earlier, and you may not have heard, Laura, that one of the things that we want to do early on, because I always say how you enter something is how it unfolds, and we want to engage our members, particularly have new MPs in their ridings, and have them come out to their institutions, or as Michelle says, to have meetings in the riding office, so that the relationship is already being established. I do have to tell you that when MPs visit institutions and see research in action, particularly in academic health science centers, where they will visit labs and then go into the hospitals and see how that knowledge is being applied, it really changes their mindset, and they really get energized and inspired. So these visits are very, very important for them to understand the impact that research has on Canadians' health and healthcare. So we have another question as well from Marion. How do we influence Treasury Board to add dollars to budget spending in health and health research? Great question.
Mary, Treasury Board is certainly one influencer in that larger decision. But when we think back to the budget where our funding levels were significantly increased through the Liberal budget, that was really a decision of the Finance Minister and the Prime Minister's office. So I would see Treasury Board and the Minister responsible as a key influencer, as opposed to a real decision maker. That ultimately, that decision comes down, as I said, to finance. And you need strong champions around that table. Minister Duncan, certainly in her role as Science Minister, was that for the community, as was Navdeep Bains. And so really, it's to make sure that the Treasury Board Minister is understands the value proposition of health and health research, so that they can be a supportive voice around the table and influence the Finance Minister's view of what level of spending health and health research should receive.
That's really helpful. And just to share with you, in 2018, the Finance Minister had already made some decisions about the investments in research, and it was Dr. Mona Niemer who really helped to get him out to labs, local labs, to see, to meet young researchers and to see how they were taking their research and creating companies from their research. And those visits really changed his mind. And we encouraged that. There were a number of lobbyists and lobbying organizations that also encouraged that. And I think it did have an impact. So Michelle is right. You can have that impact directly on a minister right up to the last minute, Marion. So it really is important to spread those discussions around and to talk to several cabinet ministers and also talk to the chief scientist, because she has the ear of the minister. And if Bill Morneau continues to be the Minister of Finance, you want to talk to our chief scientists. That will make a difference. So I think a burning question on a lot of people's minds is who you think, Michelle, will be in the cabinet and what roles these people will play. I'm sure people are interested to know, do you think Kirsty Duncan will still be a science minister? What will happen to Jeanette Petipa-Taylor? Will she continue to be our health minister? What are your thoughts on the cabinet?
So it's probably Ottawa's favorite parlor game is to figure, you know, speculate about who will be in cabinet. And I think there are some people that you will expect to return, like Chrystia Freeland, Navdeep Bains. In fact, I think Chrystia Freeland may go back to her post because she has built such strong relationships on the international front. But I don't actually expect Minister or Petipa-Taylor to return to health. Mm-hmm. They will want to put a fresh face on this cabinet. So while some will return to portfolios like Chrystia Freeland, perhaps Navdeep, I don't expect that in health. And so the one name that I have that I think is probably certainly a likely candidate is Catherine McKenna, mm-hmm. who is inevitably going to be moved out of environment. She is a lawyer by training, and will need the new health minister will need to be a strong negotiator when you think about what must be done on pharmacare. And the other reason that I think it could be Catherine is her deputy minister that she worked very well with at environment moved to health. And so for her to go back in, there's a strong working relationship with that deputy minister. So she's someone I'd be watching for in health.
Yes, and I also, I agree with you there, and I think Stephen Lucas moved there. I agree with you on the pharmacare. I also think because there is a strong push from Insight Health Canada, from FAC, to really deal with some of the health impacts of climate change mm-hmm. that I know Theresa Tam has been talking about in terms of new and emerging infectious disease, respiratory illnesses right. as a result of air pollution. So I think Stephen and Catherine would be well equipped, given their time at Environment Canada, to deal with that portfolio as well. So we have some more questions we want to get to. So from Denise and Christine, do you think that Canada's commitments to the Sustainable Development Goals, particularly around Goal 3, good health and well-being, will play a role in setting priorities in research and other policy action? Areas identified in need of action within Canada include substance abuse, cardiovascular disease, and AIDS and TB. So your thoughts on that, Michelle?
Well, in terms of the policy side, where government has a stronger role in setting agendas, I think it will play a role, and I think we will see that reflected, and I think they'll certainly reference it in some of the rationale about why they are doing the things they are. Mm-hmm. In terms of research, I don't know that the government sees itself playing a strong directive role in terms of research agendas. It has to date deferred to CIHR and tried to allow the research community to set agendas, of course, with notable exceptions through the campaign where they're going to create a new institute and so on. So I think they will encourage the community to be thinking about that. But I do expect CIHR and the other granting councils to still be setting those research agendas on their own. And I know that CIHR is in the midst of a strategy renewal, setting new strategy. And so I expect it will be considered as they go through that strategic process.
Good, thank you. So we were talking a little bit earlier as well around, given some of the points that you raised around balancing, helping to unify the country and looking at how the Prime Minister can take into account the different regions and the different imperatives of those regions. Do you think that the Prime Minister will consider including MPs from other parties within the cabinet? How do you think he'll make sure he gets the right advice from the different interests across the country, and I guess to a large extent parties, during this minority parliament? How do you think he'll balance that?
Yeah, so the Prime Minister has a real challenge in putting together a cabinet that reflects the country, because mm-hmm. they did not have any seats from Alberta or Saskatchewan. That's clearly his biggest regional deficit in creating a cabinet. We've seen different ideas floated as perhaps trial balloons. Could he appoint one of the Western senators? That didn't seem to find much support. There's been talk about taking someone who wasn't elected from the West and putting them into the cabinet. Again, that didn't find much favor, certainly in the media commentary. So it's hard to say how he will address that in cabinet. I think he will make an effort to. But I think they will have to rely on senior counselors in the Prime Minister's office. And so mm-hmm. There's been speculation that Ralph Goodale may return to Ottawa as chief of staff to the Prime Minister in a senior advisor role representing the West. Now, again, no one has confirmed that. There are, I think, every option being considered, and I think he's going to have to be very creative. I'm sure he is thinking about whether he could bring someone from outside the party into cabinet, whether that be another elected MP from another party. But again, that's very difficult to do in a minority parliament situation, is to have an opposition member in your cabinet, mm-hmm. Because while there are many policy issues that will dominate the next parliament, partisan politics will be a huge consideration. All the parties know that they're going to be back at the polls in probably 2 years' time, which means they see this period as an extended campaign. And so could they functionally work having an opposition within their own ranks? I'm not sure it's workable for them at this point.
Yes. And given the fact that, as you're saying, that the parties will probably be back into election campaigns within 2 years, I wonder about some of the commitments that were made during the Liberals' last mandate around the Council on Science and Innovation, mm-hmm. the Strategic Science Fund. Do you think initiatives like that will go forward? And the reason I ask is because, as I was saying earlier in my comments, and you've made the point as well, it's going to be very difficult for our sector to garner the attention for our imperatives, mm-hmm. given some of the other pressing issues and the overall challenge of national unity and what the Prime Minister is facing with opposition parties and with premiers across the country. So I think if these initiatives can go through, well, we have now a chief science advisor. She has a key role to play. We have a Council on Science and Innovation. We have new funds where there will be some opportunities. So those might be beacons of hope for us, taking up more space and making, putting forward proposals and making our case. So what do you think will happen with those kinds of initiatives? Do you think the Liberals will, given all these other challenges, will make good on those promises and establish this council and establish these funds?
I think so, in part because they can't afford to pick another fight. They have their hands full managing the issues of the day. And so to unwind decisions that they had so recently taken, to me, would seem to be picking a fight they don't need to have. So I think we can assume those initiatives will move forward as planned. I think the real question becomes, what comes after that? So, they've set out some things they want to do. can we get other commitments that haven't been previously committed to?
Yes.
I think that may be more difficult than making sure the ones they have committed to are realized. I'm not too concerned about those initiatives. I think they will move forward. I think the question is, where do we go from here as a country? The Liberals will be under enormous pressure on their fiscal responsibility in the next election.
Yes.
So where are they going to start to reconcile some of the federal spending? I think is an open question.
Yes, yes. No, it's a very, very good point. So, you know, one of the concerns I think that a number of people have had as well, and we've shared this with you, is the with all of the establishment of these new councils and portfolios, and now we have a CRCC, a new Frontiers Fund. We have all of these new bodies. We have this Chief Science Advisor. Is particularly in a minority parliament, how we coordinate all of this activity and make sure that we're working together. So there's that concern around how all of that will work together, and particularly given the preoccupations with pharmacare, the health minister's preoccupations with pharmacare. So I'm just wondering if you have any insights. During a minority parliament, I think there are some real concerns about there being a lot of different entities that have been established and no one minding the store.
Right.
So any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a fair point. I think when the Liberals made an initial commitment to have better coordination between granting councils and government departments, it was a bit aspirational and they found it challenging to operationalize.
Yes.
So even the CCRC, I would argue, is not operating at peak capacity. Where,
no.
You know, and you know, anecdotally, we're hearing that, you know, the deputy ministers of ISED and Health Canada feel they've got other things they need to be focused on. And so I think there's a long way to go in terms of reaching that goal that government set for itself in terms of rationalizing how science is funded and organized. And I don't think that question gets solved in a minority parliament, partly because of the length of time we expect it to survive. Now, I think that work will continue, so the yardsticks may move and we may see progress, but I don't think it will be, the government will be in a position to say promise made, promise kept in 2 years' time.
Yes, no, that makes sense. We have another question, and I think this will have to be our last, from Ellen. We are hearing rumors related to the future of Genome Canada. Are there any insights?
Ellen, I don't have any specific information about Genome Canada other than to say, as we were just noting, this whole question of how many, you know, organizations do we need in the community? How big a landscape is the government going to fund? So I think the question of how science moves forward in the country is still a live question, and therefore genome would be part of that discussion. But I don't have any specific information, good or bad, on Genome Canada.
So we'll look into that, Ellen. That's an excellent question. I'll do some sleuthing and get back to you on that. So I would like to take this occasion to thank Michelle for being with us today, as well as to thank all of you for your great questions and for your patience. Once again, our apologies. I promise you we will get this right, and for the next time, for sure. I just wanted to let you know that we are moving into a very, very busy year ahead. Research Canada will be organizing 3 Parliamentary Health Research Caucus receptions and 2 luncheons in 2020, as well as a welcome reception at the outset of the year to welcome parliamentarians back. Our members are invited to attend that welcome reception to meet parliamentarians. Our Parliamentary Health Research Caucus receptions will focus on the health impacts of climate change, rare and orphan diseases, cancer research, and medical imaging research in Canada. And we will, of course, host a Gairdner Award luncheon in April, and our AGM will be in June. So it will be a busy time on and off the Hill, and we hope that you will join us as our highly valued members. So thank you again. I would like to especially thank Christy Tompkins for putting this webcast together and for getting us up and running. It took a bit of time, but Christy got us into a good place. So thank you all.